Today's talk is Dying to Live. And the subheading of the talk is interesting. It's an exploration into living well and dying well. Mike is going to be exploring, I guess, two different themes with us. What is death exactly? How to die well? And of course, what happens next? And that's one thing. The second thing is what it means to arrive at the end of one's life and why do we grieve when someone dies? So what's happening in my journey? What's happening when somebody else's journey is moving on? So our speaker is Mike George. Mike is an author of 16 books now, including Being Yourself, Don't Get Mad, Get Wise, and 7 Myths About Love, Actually. With insight and humor, Mike brings together strands of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and continuous unlearning. Not learning, unlearning. Mike's going to share with us until 7:10. He will do a short 3-minute meditation, and after that, all the questions you send in, I will be putting them to Mike on your behalf. So feel free to send in your questions via the question and answer link that I think many of you found earlier. Look forward to receiving your questions. Mike, thank you. Over to you.
Thanks, Artie, and a warm welcome to everyone. Thanks very much for tuning in, as always, or zooming in, as they say. And if we don't cover what the description of this evening's talk is all about, which is Artie has brilliantly repeated, then just nudge me at the end or send me a question if I'm not. I'm actually going to raise as many questions as there are answers, ultimately, because it's no small topic and it's no clear topic. I think most people approach this whole thing of dying by referring to many out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences, of which there are many books now, or even children who are a very young age and they talk about their previous life, you know, and they take big people to their previous address and they tell them of their previous parents, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not going to come at it from that angle so much. I mean, that's all, it's a little bit speculative, as everything must be about death and dying. But I'm going to try and approach it in different ways. And as I said at the beginning, they're probably going to raise as many questions as the answer. So do feel free to throw your questions into the chat box and Artie will pick them up later. Now, so you don't have to listen to me or watch me for the next 40 minutes, I'm going to share my screen for part of that time and take you on a little bit of a journey. And so let me do this, and then let me do that. And that should bring up that. And there's our topic for the night, Dying to Live. How to Die in Order to Live really is a shortened version of the subtitle, and that's what I'm kind of looking at mostly tonight, is this idea of how to die in order to live. And as you probably gather, that the reason I say it like that is that I'm really kind of saying that we're kind of learning how to live, and part of that learning how to live now means that we have to die now. not as in slip away, but we have to die in a certain way in order to know life. So I'm beginning with four little insights, which kind of are red threads that run through this evening. And I'll kind of refer back to them constantly. And consciousness, number one, is all that you are. And I need to kind of lay that one down, because I'm always going to be speaking to you about you as consciousness, about consciousness itself, as opposed to the form. Now, you've been conditioned to believe that you are form, that you're what you see in the mirror. And I'm kind of saying, I'm kind of setting up front that that's not you. Yeah, and that's really quite hard for most people because that's how we are conditioned and programmed. But many of you will be familiar with the idea that consciousness is what you are and that it's the form that is the secondary energy. It's the energy, sometimes it's called matter, spiritual energy and material energy. So I'm playing with that separation a little bit. Number three, you know that bodies come to an end, that matter comes to an end. Yeah, you know that because you see people around you going through the process of death and dying, as you're familiar. But what we don't know is that consciousness comes to an end. And what I'm really saying is that aliveness, to really feel alive, it's only possible when there's no longer the fear of endings, yeah, or the fear of death, if you like, which is the same thing, ending death. In this context, it's almost the same thing. So aliveness, this feeling of being alive, or fully present, fully aware, fully alive, is only possible when the fear disappears, because it's the fear that makes us contract and is the result of our contraction. And so aliveness is this expansiveness, it's this aliveness, this awareness, basically, of being. So these are the four insights which I kind of lay down as foundations. Let's go to the first idea. And many of you, again, will be familiar with this idea, that if you die before you die, then when you die, you don't die. And I'm not quite sure where this comes from. This is not me, by the way, but it's just worth dwelling on it for a moment. If you die before you die, then when you die, you don't die. Yeah. So again, I'm going to kind of expand, open that out and try and help myself to understand it, is really what I'm doing is talking to myself as usual, especially across Zoom. Because I'm just talking to a screen, really. So what we spend our life doing is acquiring. We're taught to acquire. And to be famous. We want more stuff. We want a position. We want achievement. We want more likes on our Facebook page. And so we're always in this process of acquiring something. That's what we're taught to do in order to feel successful, in order to feel happy. You can't be happy unless you acquire. And so it's tangible and non-tangible things that we've cultivated the habit of acquisition. And so because of that, this is where we get our vitality. Now, the vitality is another word for aliveness, basically. And so when we get what we want, when I get what I want, when I acquire what I want, oh, fantastic, wonderful, I feel great, at least for a temporary period. And sometimes those acquisitions, they give us that feeling of temporary security. Yeah, and so of course, we don't kind of realize, we're not aware, but it how temporary it is. That's why we always keep looking and searching and questing for more, because when we take our vitality, our aliveness from the stuff that we acquire, visible and invisible, then it leads to this desire for more. I want more. I've got to get more. Yeah, please. Yeah. Now, I'm kind of being quite rational here, quite logical about all this, because what is acquisition? When you acquire something, it's the desire really to become attached to. In other words, to say, what I've acquired is now mine. That really is the epitome of an attachment to. And so when you become attached to anything, anyone, anywhere, any memory, anything, when you become attached to anything, when your consciousness attaches itself to the image of the thing, the person, the memory, the place, then what you set yourself up for is something called fear. And so we've kind of absorbed the belief and belief system that life is a process of becoming attached to things, to people, to places, to memories, yeah, to ideas, to philosophies, and so on. We become very attached. And that's why we live our life in fear, because where there is attachment, there is always the fear of loss. Fear being attention, anxiety, worry, panic, it's different faces, but essentially it's fear. And so living our life essentially becomes a process of living in fear, because we become attached to people, things, places, ideas, memories, and so on. And most of us will justify that by saying, well, everyone else is doing it, so it must be the natural thing to do, to live like that. So what we don't notice, well, maybe some of us do, is that fear drains and dissipates our energy. You know, it's actually not a separate thing. It's how we distort the energy of our consciousness from its highest vibration, which we sometimes call love, into its lowest vibration, which we call fear. Yeah, because that's what fear is. It's love distorted by attachment. I don't mean Hollywood love. I don't mean I love you or romantic love. I just mean the natural highest vibration of our own consciousness. So life, a life of fear, then becomes a slow and sufferingful death. Now I use the word sufferingful. I think I've invented a new word there, because I don't want to use painful, because pain and suffering are different things. Pain is physical. Pain is what happens when something hits or touches your body, or you get a knife in your body, or someone hits you. Whereas suffering is mental and emotional. Yeah? And so we live in a state of mental and emotional suffering. Yeah. And slowly but slowly, that's draining and dissipating our energies. So it's like, as we're living, we're dying. Yeah. So life becomes a process of dying. Yeah, and again, that's not a new idea, but it's just a useful one to play around with and understand. So we spend most of our life searching for what we believe will alleviate our suffering, which is our unhappiness, basically. So we've learned to believe, we're taught to believe that the acquisition of more things will alleviate our unhappiness. You'll be happy when you get, when you go, when you have, when you meet. And so we're taught to believe that happiness is acquisition. And yet it's acquisition, it's the process of acquisition, which has generated our suffering in the first place. And so it's like a cycle. And we don't notice, we're not aware that we're kind of living in this cycle. So if you die before you die, when you die, you don't die. What does this mean exactly? It really means that if you let go detached, cultivate a relationship of non-attachment, you know, which sounds easy in theory, but not so easy in practice, it means you stop making your freedom and your vitality dependent on what you acquire. Yeah. That's what we've done. We've learned to do. We've learned to believe that freedom is going somewhere and acquiring 2 weeks on the beach in Benidorm or whatever, that our vitality is dependent on the new car in the garage. In other words, I feel alive because I've got my new car, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's what we've been taught to believe. And of course, what I'm saying is, no, it's not true. It's the opposite. So by letting go, you know, by moving beyond acquisition, then you are dying to what you are attached to. In other words, letting go is really the process of death in a life defined by acquisition. Letting go is the process of death defined by a life of acquisition, yeah, of acquiring, of getting, of wanting something. So when it's time to die, when it's actually time to die, the classical meaning of our understanding of death, it means you will move on without reluctance or suffering. In other words, we find it death difficult, both as an imagined idea and sometimes the reality. Why? Because we're trying to hold on, yeah, to anything or anyone that we have believe we have acquired, that I believe is mine. Yeah, and so if you don't realize nothing is mine, then it will feel like everything is painfully ripped away when the time comes, when that time comes, when it is time to exit. What do we say? They left their mortal coil being the physical form and consciousness being what exits from it. Yeah. So if you realize nothing is mine now, then if you don't realize it, then everything it'll be painfully ripped away when the time comes, and I don't want to go, I don't want to go. And of course, this is the process of death. And again, I just a sidetrack here. You've heard of the process of death and the stages of dying, is that there comes a moment when you accept that you are going to die and you are going to leave the body. And that acceptance is the moment you've let go of everything that you believe you have acquired in your life. So fear of death is really the fear of the ending of my story. Yeah. And so we all have a life story. We all create a story. It's part of being here. And so within the story are all the things and people and places that you've become attached to, that you believe you have acquired, and you become attached, and you become dependent on, and that you have used to feather your nest or to create your comfort zone, as they say. So fear is always the fear of loss. And so fear really is the fear of losing anything that you've become attached to. But of course, you're not attached anymore. It's not mine anymore. And so you don't have no more fear. And so the fear is gone. And so suddenly, your life expands. Your life is no longer contracted. Yeah, you don't feel contracted on the inside. You feel alive. You feel free on the inside. And this is what freedom and aliveness really is. So what you've learned to do is simply fear losing what you become attached to and dependent on. And that's what keeps you small, contracted, little, extremely unhappy, insecure, always looking for something, someone, somewhere that will alleviate that feeling, that emotional state that we've created within ourselves. So if you don't die, in other words, let go before you die, you will suffer, he said laughing. In other words, you know, the many different emotions that we create, anger and fear is an emotion, depression, sadness, basically, different faces of sadness. All these emotions are forms of suffering. But of course, we've learned, we've heard, and we've assimilated the belief system that they are, well, they're natural, they're human nature. They come with a package called life. And I'm kind of challenging that. I'm saying, no, they don't, actually. They come within us because we become attached to things. We become dependent on people. We become livers in our own comfort zone, full of acquisitions, basically. And you know the old saying, you can't take anything with you when you go. So what we do, we spend our whole life holding on to things, and we don't realize we're using those things to make us feel alive. And then when it is time to go, then it's such a horrible, horrible destiny. Or it seems that way. And for some, it becomes that way. It becomes such a way. Instead of just, well, yeah, it's time to go. It's time to slip away. See you later. So this is part one. Part two of the ideas I'd like to share with you really take us into this idea of what life really is, how we create it. It's a little bit deeper. And so the question is, are you living the dream? You know, you've heard the saying, oh, I'm just living the dream. I've won the tennis tournament. I've won the race. I've got what I wanted. Yeah, my desires have been fulfilled. So I'm just kind of living the dream. And so their happiness, their aliveness is based on the acquisition of something, the winning of something, the achievement of something. So it just means that their desires have been fulfilled. Yeah, their dreams have been. Dreams, desires, almost the same thing for many people. But what they don't realize is that they're now trapped. Yeah, they're now trapped because desires, as you know, you fulfill one desire and another one shows up, and another one shows up, and another one shows up. And you're always wanting something more. And so it's like you're trapped, not just in the fulfillment of the dream, the desire, but in the process of wanting more of what you've just experienced. And so maybe you've realized, and I don't know, you might have done, that you're living in a dream. Yeah. Yeah. That life itself is a dream. Yeah. And it just throws a different light altogether over death, as I'll try to explain. So when you've realized that you're living in a dream, that everything around you, everything that's happening within you, around you, to you, is really, it's like a dream. It's just a very ordered dream, and sometimes a very rational dream. But nevertheless, it is just a very, very dreamlike experience. And for another word for dream that I would use is illusion. So you're aware of the illusion. And that's really what I was trying to explain to Artie at the very beginning. We become aware of the illusion. Always wanting something more, of believing that I'm going to become something more. I mean, this is an illusion. This is a dream. You know, it's the dream of desire, basically. And so when you're aware of the illusion, when you're fully aware this is just a dream, then you're free. Paradoxically, you're free because you see clearly the reality. Yeah. Now, let me explain how this works. Why you live in a dream from birth to farewell to the moment you have to say goodbye. This is why. And once again, just let me say, if this doesn't make sense, just let me know. A dream means illusion, an illusion which seems real at the time. So what we're experiencing now seems real. What you're watching on the news seems real. What you're saying to your partner across the room seems real. It seems real, but actually much of it is a dream. For example, let's say you've adopted one belief, you've absorbed and assimilated one belief, that the world is a dark and dangerous place. And you hear yourself expressing that after watching the news at 10 on TV, let's say, or reading a newspaper, oh, it's a terrible world. So you will perceive events, you will see, you will create in your consciousness events and situations as a threat. Keep away. I don't want to go there. I don't want this. I don't want that. No, I don't want that to happen. That's good. Oh, it's terrible. And so you will frequently live in a fearful state of consciousness. And that's entirely of your own making. Whereas there's a person who's learned to believe that life is just this incredible creative opportunity. That the world is full of opportunity. And so they'll perceive events and situations as a challenge and an opportunity to have fun, to play. And so they have a very different creation of the same event than the other person. And so they feel very free. Yeah, I'm going to meet it. I'm going to talk to it. I'm going to engage with it. I feel free. Nothing can. So you get these two belief systems. And so really, it's just an example of according to the beliefs that you are carrying, so you will create the world in front of you. Yeah, and how you create the world, then you have to ask the question, am I creating reality or something less than reality? Yeah. Let's not go into the question of what is reality. That's the a very deep philosophical question, but just carrying on in this theme, from the day you were born, you have been taught to create and live in a dream. And you're not, most people are not aware of this. They don't know this. Yeah, they're not conscious of this. For example, it goes something like this. I don't know if you've had a baby or you've certainly been a baby, or you certainly watched babies. And when you watch babies, you see them reaching for toys and they're wondering. You can see in their face this wonderment. And they're kind of playing with the toy and they're kind of realizing there's a hand and there's a toy. So they're a bit wild-eyed. Sometimes they go, oh, it's fantastic. Otherwise, they're going, what is this? Don't really understand it. Don't get it. And so what they're doing, what the process is happening is that they're coming out of oneness into individuality. So when the baby first arrives, it's just everything is one. It doesn't separate things. Certainly doesn't separate itself, hasn't yet learned that it is an individual, but it's using its senses and it's taught to use its senses. It's dangling things in front of it. There's a parent smiling in front of it, and it's beginning to learn very strange idea that it is an individual being. Before that, it was just, everything was just one. It was just one. It didn't think it. It just saw it. It was just aware of it. And so gradually, but slowly, as the baby learns, this sense of oneness is lost, the sense of connectedness to everything, the sense of no separation is lost. So what we teach the baby to do is to move from an internal sense of the unification of everything, and it's not thinking it, it's just seeing it, just perceiving it, to an external sense of fragmentation, which ultimately is going to include itself, that I am a fragment. And so the child starts to grow up and we teach it, it has a unique individual name. And it believes that it is only called by this name. It believes it only goes to this school, and it believes this is where it will learn. It believes that this is its gender. It believes that it needs to do this work. It believes that its nationality is such and such. It believes that there are others. It believes that it has a unique and only a unique, small, tiny little family. And so all these beliefs, in a sense, they're illusions. Just like the other beliefs that it's an individual, that it's just on its own, and it's a fragment. These are illusions. These are beliefs which we teach the child. And so the child begins to see the world that way. It begins to create from those beliefs, from those illusions. Those beliefs are illusions. It starts to create a dream, which it then calls reality. So we start to live our dream, live in our dream, but believe that it is the only reality. Wow, don't know if you're getting this, but we also learn that life is about competition and confrontation. That's kind of, well, you've got to compete, you've got to be the best, survival of the fittest. You've got to make sure you confront those people, that thing, that person. You've got to walk towards it and make it do what you want. You've got to get what you want. You've got to confront life and make it happen. And just two examples, or a few examples, of many beliefs which are, well, for me anyway, might not be for you. They're not true. They are illusions. But it's from these beliefs that the dream is created. And then we become an adult, and the adult, we learn to believe that job and profession is very important. In fact, we learn to believe I am my job and my profession. I learn to believe that I have a family, that the family is mine, that these people are mine and those other people are not mine. This is my family, or this is my position. In fact, I occupy this position, for I am this position. And so this property belongs to me, it's mine. And so this achievement, I achieved this, I did this. And so therefore this defines me. This is what my ego is based on. This is the illusion of Mina. Oh, I'm such a victim. They shouldn't have done this. This makes me feel so bad. They made me feel so bad. I'm a victim of this. And so we learn to add layers upon layer upon layer. Beliefs, illusions, because all of these are illusions. I'm not my job. I'm not, the family doesn't belong to me. Yeah, I'm not the things that have come into my life, cars and houses and things. They're not me, they're not mine. They pass through. And so, but I learn to believe they are. And so I look at the world through this belief system and I see the world through this belief system. And that's like the equivalent of me dreaming. I'm dreaming. Oh, sorry, money. Yeah, what's the belief system around money? That it brings you a sense of security. No, it doesn't. It makes you insecure, on the other hand. And yet we're all about, gotta get as much money as I can, be as secure as I can. So the illusions are layered as one grows up and time goes by. So we don't notice them. We don't notice them. And this is what makes the dream so real. Yeah, this is what makes the dream, which we call reality. It's what makes us believe this is reality. Yeah. So your dream, which includes my story, is therefore becomes a matrix of desires, preferences, dependencies, biases, beliefs, perceptions, misidentifications. It's kind of all of those things in a different way for different people, you know, because we're all different. We all create these perceptions, beliefs, biases, assimilate them from different places and different forms and different shapes. And so what we do is we all do that in some way or other. And so what we've assimilated and learned in our life so far, and this is why everyone's dream is slightly or a lot different. This is why we argue, because we're really saying my dream, which is really me saying this is my reality and this is the real reality. And the other person saying, no, it's not. It's the way I'm seeing it. It's my reality, and that's the true reality. But both are dreams. They're just dreams. So the essence of that whole process is we start with a sense of oneness or unity or interconnectedness. And then we learn that I am an individual. I am. We learn to say I am. Oh, I am. I am. I am. And so that becomes two-ness. Then there's me and there's you. I know I am. Oh, yes, I know I am. I'm aware that I am. And so awareness arises. Awareness, I'm aware that I know that I am. And if, as soon as I become aware that I know that I am and I say it to someone, then I need to know more. I've got to have more. I've got to know. I've got to know more. There's more to know. And so off we go. Because the seeker is born. I need to know more about this life, about how it works, and how to become enlightened. And so I need to know, I need to have more. And so the seeker is born, the searcher, the quester, the person who's always becoming but can never arrive. It's impossible to arrive. And I might do that in a group. I might find someone who sets themselves up as someone who's already arrived. But they haven't really. It's their own illusion. It's their own dream. It's their own story. So dying while alive is the end of the need for a story. Yeah. I am not my story. I get to create a story, but I am not my story. And everything in the story is not mine. It's the end of feeling alone. Yeah. You begin to notice, you begin to feel the connectedness of everything. You begin to see the connectedness. You know, it's not an assuaging loneliness, but it's this connection with everything, the natural world, other people, everything around, everything in life. This feeling of alone disappears. It's the end of attachment. You know, when you decide to die, you just decide, I'm not going to get attached to anything. Everything comes and going. I can see it now. I can see it clearly. Nothing is mine. Yeah, it's just here for a while. And whatever it is, and or whatever they are, and it's that everything passes. Everything comes to pass. It's the end of seeking. I don't need to seek anything. I don't need to get anything. I don't need to have anything. I don't need to acquire even knowledge and wisdom. Yeah, I already have it. It's already there. I just need to be quiet, be still, and listen. 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 It's the end of fear, because I don't attach to anything, and therefore I don't fear losing anything. All fear is the fear of loss. Notice whenever you panic, or there's anxiety, or there's terror, it's always the fear, a fear of some kind of loss. It might be intangible, it might just be your comfort. I don't want to sit in another chair. I'm scared of sitting in another chair because I might lose the chair in which I feel most comfortable. I might lose the feeling of comfort. And so it's the end of feeling trapped in what you've learned to believe is mine. Yeah. Because whatever you believe is mine belongs to me. I own it. Then you're trapped in that object, that person, that memory, that idea, that philosophy. You're trapped in it. It is outside, but it's also in your consciousness. It's a mental construct in which you have trapped yourself in. And that's why we feel small, because whenever you trap yourself in anything in your mind, then you have to contract yourself to fit in to that idea, to the image of that object, to the image of that person, to what that person didn't do or whatever. In other words, you contract your consciousness and you get lost. You're trapped in what's on your mind. Yeah. So it's also the end of the dream in life and the beginning of a new reality, which is defined by this idea of becoming free, becoming really alive. Yeah, this is real aliveness. Yeah, and this is the possibility of now. You realize there's only now. There's no past. Past is just ideas, just memories. They're not real. There's no future, just speculations. It's not real. It's just misuse of my attention to go into the past, to go into speculations about the future. I'm giving myself my attention, same thing, to what doesn't exist right now. All that exists right now is now. All that exists right now is now. Yeah. So finally, part three, the art of aliveness, being fully alive, is being no one. Yeah, and the reason I say that is it's not that you have to practice being no one. It's just realizing that whatever I've acquired, whatever I call mine, whatever I become attached to, I'm using to define myself. Yeah, and so ultimately, I'm no one. I am no one. I'm not what I do. I'm no one. I'm not where I come from. I'm not my nationality. Sure, that language is going on in the world, but it's not what I build my sense of identity, my sense of who I am out of. Yeah, so ultimately, I'm no one playing the game of being someone. But in my consciousness, I'm no one. So when you try to be somebody, you're attempting to contradict the truth of who you are. In other words, when you try and be someone, get attention, and I need them to give me time, and I'm needy of that to bolster my bank account. I'm needy. I'm trying to be someone. That means I'm contradicting the truth of who I am, which is no one. Yeah, I allow myself to remember life is just a game. It's all it is, just a game, and I'm here to play. And of course, the game is in its most complex at the moment, in its most challenging stage at the moment. It's speedy. It's got all kinds of information coming at me on the news, from colleagues, from family, all kinds of information coming at me which are, it's as if they're designed to make me take life so seriously. Yeah, and then I forget to be playful, to be full of play. Yeah, to be playful, to play the game of life. Yeah. And very gradually, as you realize I am no one, it's what consciousness is. Consciousness is just consciousness. That's all it is. Nothing more, nothing less. Yeah. And I'm just using two words, no one, to describe that. Gradually, the more you realize that, see that, know that for yourself, you will disappear. And they will just be play. And you kind of get little tastes of this, because when you do something, when you give yourself wholeheartedly, maybe being creative somewhere, then you notice you forget yourself and you're totally absorbed in what you're doing, in what you're giving to the creative process. You're totally absorbed and your sense of you, your sense of I kind of disappear. It's gone. That in itself is a kind of living death, a dying alive. Notice when you're playing, when you are being creative and playing. So being fully alive is having nothing. It's this realization, which I shared with you earlier on. Whenever you think or say that's mine, you compromise yourself. Yeah, nothing is mine, but I'm trying to make something mine. I'm trying to own something. This is why they say we don't have possessions. Possessions have us. And so I'm constantly thinking about that, worried about that, and fear I'm going to lose that. So I'm compromising, diminishing myself. So allow yourself to remember that nothing and no one belongs to me. Yeah. Free, be free. Because as soon as you say that belongs to me, you're trapped in what you think belongs to you. You're trapped in it, not outside, but in your own consciousness. You're trapped in it. So you're shrinking yourself. Then you will cease to want anything or anyone. And the agitation of I want, which is the agitation of desire, will fall away. Things don't make us happy. You know, fulfilling a desire doesn't make you happy. It's the ending of the agitation. When the object arrives, there's an ending to the agitation. And that allows a natural happiness, what I would call contentment, to arise from inside. Otherwise, the agitation is like a veil we're throwing over, yeah, that happiness. Yeah, the I want is like a veil that we're throwing over it. And so that's why we don't feel it, yeah, between now and the desire being fulfilled. We don't feel it. So finally, being fully alive is going nowhere. When you believe you need to be somewhere, notice you're no longer fully present. You're sitting in the car believing that we need to be at a certain destination, and therefore I'm not present for the person who's next to me in the car. I'm not fully present. I'm not present in that moment. I need to get somewhere. So it's not a question of practicing. It's just seeing and knowing, and noticing, oh, I'm making myself absent. Okay, no problem. Don't hurt myself. Don't turn the gun on yourself. Just notice. And then gradually one day you'll be present for everything. Allow yourself to remember you are always here. Not here as in wanting or expecting to go there eventually, but you're always here. Here. Yeah. We tend to, okay, I'm here, but I want to be there. I want to go there. I need to go there. So we tend to have here and there as opposites, but ultimately there is only here. It has no opposite. Ultimately, that's another seminar, I think. Till there is no I to go anywhere. Yeah. And in the sense there's no I when there's no individuality, there's no I-ness when you are aware that everything is one, oneness, it's just one, connected, everything's interconnected, everything is one. It's how we started, it's how we end. And just to finalize, just to finish to say, my sense is that when we actually do, when consciousness does leave its form, it just returns to that oneness. And it's like, you know, you wake up from a dream in the morning and you think, oh God, I thought that was real for a moment. And then suddenly, oh, it was a dream, and then you forget it. And so I think that's the same with, this is me, this is definitely me. I get the sense that that's what happens when we die. We just forget. We just, well, that was a dream. And so we instantly forget it. In other words, it wasn't real. In other words, it didn't really happen. Oh, that's challenging. Yeah. And so for me, that's what happens when consciousness leaves the form of the body. So listen, thanks very much for your attention. Thanks for listening. I don't know if that's useful at all, but that's that's our journey for the evening, as they say.
Would you lead us into meditation for a couple of minutes, Mike?
And then I'll close. If you really insist, yes, if you really insist, that's fine.
We'd love it.
Yeah, okay. So meditation is very simple. And as some of you already know, I try and keep it as simple as possible and try not to give you another lecture. And so it's just relax your body in the chair. It's not something you do. It's not something that you practice, really. It's got to be a state of consciousness that you're carrying throughout the day, state of being that you're in. You're in. You're in all the time, moment to moment. And so just relax your body, just like you relax your being. Yeah. If you realize that it's all a dream, then that kind of helps towards, oh, really? That's all it is? Oh, okay, then, oh, I've been taking it so seriously, oh, so tense. So just relax. That idea can help a little bit. And just focus your attention or your eyes away from the screen, because there's the tendency to look at the screen and judge it and label things and name things and so on. So you're creating a noise and your consciousness. So just shift your gaze, and you can close your eyes if you want. Just experiment with not trying to stop your thinking, but just watch, observe your thoughts. Let your thoughts come and then let them go. Yeah. And notice there's a quietness, a calmness, there's a peace arising from within you, from you, not coming from the screen or the computer or anywhere in the room. It's this quietness, this easiness is already present and is now your presence. And just allow that to relax you even more. And as you do, you'll notice this is the most natural feeling. Natural arising from inside. Calm, easy, and yet very aware. Very aware. Not holding on to anything. If any thoughts in the forms of memories come, then just let them go. Let them pass through. Just be a little curious. Oh, that's a thought. Okay. That's another thought. Let it go. And let that idea and just enjoy the joy of being calm and easy, knowing that this is it. This is all there is. This is all. Right here. Right now. There's nothing to add. Nothing to take away. Just this.
Thank you. A number of people have written and said thank you already, but there's one person who perhaps you would like to share something with. They said, I don't understand what's so funny in this presentation. Some people attending have experienced loss and the humor isn't helpful.
Yeah. I'm suggesting, and it's just a suggestion, and it's not possible to lose anything or anyone. You know, when we say I've lost a person or I've lost someone in my life, that means you believe they were mine, my partner, my child. Yeah, no, they weren't mine. That's the illusion. Nothing is mine. Nothing belongs to me. Yeah. And so therefore, loss is an illusion. You didn't lose because they weren't mine. So it's necessary to kind of see that. Now, I don't expect you to believe that or not believe that. I don't want you to. I don't think you should. If you don't want to, that's fine. And so that's all I'm saying is that I know it's not easy. I know it's challenging. And someone that you've become very close to, and by close, I'm kind of pointing towards what I'm pointing towards a lot, this thing called attachment. And we get attachment and love mixed up. And so there needs to be that separation and understanding. What's the difference between the two? Is there a difference between love and attachment? If attachment creates fear, love is the opposite of fear. And so I need to do a little bit of exploration. I need to be curious for myself. And so, that's probably enough, actually.
Thank you. When you say be no one, I find it easier said than done in the society. Especially when you're applying for jobs or trying to get a promotion at work. I feel like people who fit a certain behavior or profile get the opportunity rather than myself. How can I overcome my upset at this, as it often makes me feel alone in the world?
Yeah, I just don't want it so much. You know, your upsetness is coming from wanting. You know, I've got to get that job. I've got to get that position. I want it. I need it. And so this thought process, you know, I can't hold up my head in society unless I have it. You know, I've got to kind of break down those belief systems, because it's not getting the job that is making me upset or feel lonely or whatever. You know, it's all entirely in my own head. In other words, your dignity, your worth is not dependent on what you do, whether it's for a living or not. But what we learn to do is to make our dignity and our worth, our worthiness, our esteem, dependent on what we do. And that's a mistake. That's part of the dream we're living in, the dream we're creating. So I've got to break through that. I'm going to challenge that, see that that's a belief I'm carrying, and I'm going to challenge it and break through it. Otherwise, what you will do, and what many people do in their life, is that they force themselves to be a certain way because they believe they have to be that way to get what they want. And so they have a habit of forcing and a habit of being inauthentic as a result. So it's necessary to really kind of explore that whole territory within yourself. That's why, you know, talks like this and the weeklies and so on, they're good. They stimulate, you know, you to do that, hopefully. And then gradually you'll realize your dignity and worth is innate, and that you don't need to force yourself to be a certain type of person. It's not worth it. You're compromising your own authenticity, and therefore you make yourself feel guilty. And so join those dots, you know. It's sometimes called a little bit of inner work, but it's necessary to break through the belief systems that we've assimilated so far.
Next question. What would you say to someone who is dying and doesn't believe in being the eternal consciousness? And what would you say to their families who were in pain and believe that death is the end? How would you show your compassion?
Just by being present, really. By being present and not being affected by the scene of death. Not being affected by the emotions of those around the person who's dying, but just being present and listening. It's not the time. That is not the time to say, "Well, you don't die. You, whatever." It's not the time for philosophy, or for another understanding of what's going on. It's just not the time. It's just the time to be present and to bring a vibration, you know, into the room or the context of those relationships that would then be helpful. And that vibration is the vibration of love, and that's what compassion is. It's love in action. You know, it's not a question of trying to fix someone or to change their minds or to change their understanding. And I'm really not trying to do that with anyone who's watching tonight. You know, it's you know, you'll have forgotten 90% of this in a week's time, and so, you know, it's entirely up to the individual how they process it.
Thank you. Brilliant talk, thank you. But what reflex should come to mind when you face a panic attack? For instance, occasional crowdedness, confined space, etc. I'm looking for a starting point and to build on it.
The thing to do would be to reflect afterwards, to give yourself the time and the space afterwards to reflect on why you created that panic in the first place. Panic is kind of a fear of fear. Yeah. Excuse me. And so sometimes that emerges as a phobia. So you have to decide, you know, one of the ways they overcome. People help people overcome their phobias is to go towards what's triggering that. It's not causing it, it's triggering it. So there's something within you that is being triggered to generate that feeling. So you either go towards it even more and until it has no power over you to trigger you, or you sit quietly in a corner and you become more aware of what it is within you. Some memory is being evoked, something in the past, I don't know. And then the third thing would be to get help. You can get help, not that someone's going to help you, but someone's going to be instrumental in sharing with you a deeper understanding of yourself. Yeah, and and then take that understanding and play with it and practice and see it clearly. And really, in a sense, I've been sharing a different understanding of yourself tonight, in a small way. And so I would say play with it, explore it, see what's right, what's wrong, what's true for you, what's not true for you. But focus on it, give it your attention. And over time, the panic will become less and less. It's a little bit like public speaking tends to be one of people's greatest fears. And the only way to overcome that fear is to keep doing it. Yeah. And so you just get up there and you speak to a group, to a small group, a huge group. And so gradually, slowly, with practice, it ceases to trigger, because it doesn't create your panic attack, your fear, same thing. It's me. So gradually the fear becomes less and less and less. So there's different ways that you can tackle it, but essentially it's all about getting to know you better.
Thank you. What do you practice to stop yourself from taking things so seriously, as this is such a deep habit?
Yes. Well, you probably notice I laugh quite a bit, apparently for no reason. Yeah. Or for sometimes what other people perceive to be the wrong reason. Yeah. And there's, ultimately, there's no right or wrong. And so I'm just naturally, I naturally laugh, really. I find the whole thing funny, maybe because I've seen clearly that this is real, this is a dream, in a sense. I don't mean a sleep dream, but, you know, it's not real. People are acting and interacting from a place of illusion, and you can only laugh. And that said, please don't get me wrong, I do take some things, so some seriously, for a certain length of time, until I realize, oh, wait a minute, it's part of the dream, if you like. You know, and then suddenly a smile, or else I relax. Yeah. And so I'm not there yet. You know, I'm not sitting on a, you know, I'm not saying this is the be all and the end all. I'm saying this is the practice. This is seeing clearly the illusions by which we have learned to live, and by which others learn to live. Yeah.
Thank you. The next two questions look at feeling lonely. Both are asking, any idea how to stop feeling loneliness within? And another side to that is, what can I do to accept life and say that this is all there is without adding to that loneliness?
Yeah. You know, if you understand that loneliness is coming from neediness, you know, there's the need for someone or something or someone to affirm me. And it's different from aloneness. You know, you get some people who are accustomed to being alone all the time, almost all the time. And they're not uncomfortable at all. So you have to ask why. Why are they comfortable being alone? And they're not lonely. And it's because they're not needy. They're not needy in human relationship, essentially. And that means that, you know, that they're not dependent on anyone or anything to fulfill any need in themselves. So there's neediness there. Now, all I can say is share the insight that you have everything you need within you, but you haven't realized that yet. Yeah. And so it's necessary to kind of realize that I have everything I need. I don't need anyone. I'm quite comfortable being around people, but I'm also quite comfortable not being around people. And so this is freedom from neediness, from wanting, desiring, in a sense. It's almost the same thing. And so when you realize that you have everything you need, then you no longer feel isolated. When you are on your own, you know, you won't feel lonely or alone. You know, one of the illusions that we're taught is that you have to be with someone. You have to marry, you have to get with, you have to live with, you have to connect to some other human being. You know, there has to be an exclusive one just for you. And if you haven't got one, then you're a failure. And so, you go down those layers and you're getting to a very deep neediness. And that's what some people have learned to cultivate in themselves. And what I'm saying is that you can free yourself from that by realizing everything you need is already within you. And paradoxically, when you stop being needy of others, then more of the others will probably gather around you and connect with you and want to be with you, etc. But as soon as others sense that your neediness, you're wanting something, that you're feeling, you're complaining about, oh, I feel so alone, then I don't know, see you later. I mean, they're not doing that, but in their heads, they're kind of maybe doing that, maybe some people more than others. So it's really about what I would call yourself. When you become self-contained, paradoxically, you become much more expansive, much more easy to connect with.
And I think this will have to be the last question this evening, although there are more coming in, I think. What do you say to children when their grandmother has died? How do you communicate to them that this is not a sad matter?
Yes. Well, you can't tell them, you don't say to them that this is not a sad matter. All you can do is, like everything else with children, is they learn by watching and by feeling. Yeah. So if you're not sad, you know, if it was just the natural passing in this moment, which it was their moment, it was their time. You might say little as that, it was just their moment, it was their time to go. One right answer, because it's a hypothetical situation, but essentially you probably wouldn't say anything, you just wouldn't be sad yourself. And you would perhaps maybe appreciate the many memories that grandma left behind, you know, remembering the good times and the gifts that she shared, the gift of her presence. And so by remembering that, you're not sad, you're celebrating. So you're teaching them, not telling them, but you're showing them you're being in a celebratory mode. And so they see that. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, okay, yeah, I know. I couldn't do that yet. And so that would be one response to such a question.
Otherwise, all that's left for me to say is thank you to our speaker and thank you to the audience for joining us. We look forward to welcoming you all back very soon. Good night.
Bye.